All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Michael Che is on the show today. You know him from Saturday Night Live, where he's the co-head writer and he co-hosts Weekend Update with Colin Jost. He also has his own sketch show, That Damn Michael Che, on HBO Max. That's the name of the show. I'm not saying that about him. That Damn Michael Che. Season 2 premieres next week. I talked to him in my hotel room in New York City. And it was great. It was great to finally hang out with Michael. So I'm going to be in D.C. tomorrow night at the Kennedy Center. I think we'll have a pretty good turnout. But also, here's the weird thing. My old college roommate Lance lives in D.C., and I see him maybe once a year, less. I haven't seen him a whole lot in the last, I don't know, how old are we? When was it? 35 years. But it's an interesting thing that we were, you know, pretty close. We lived together for 2 years in college housing and then for another 2 or 3 years, I think, off campus. But then you kind of, your life goes different ways. So I'm going to see Lance, and I think I'm maybe going to do an episode with him. I'm going to talk to him, which I'm nervous about. Because what is that? Sort of like, let's go over what you remember about me. But we'll see. You know, to talk about life with somebody. And then turns out in Red Bank, New Jersey, where I will be on this Saturday, the other two guys we live with, Brad and Tony, are coming to the shows. Now, I haven't seen these guys really much. I can count them on one hand in the last 35 years. And it's just wild. I don't know. Maybe I can get them all on tape. We'll see. But it's going to be wild. It's always wild to see people after so long. I can't even imagine what Tony looks like. I mean, I used to see this guy like every day, pretty high, but I'd see him every day. We were all pretty high. I don't know. I don't know how we amounted to much to anything, but maybe we can fill in some blanks in each other's lives. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I've been fairly emotional lately. I'm trying to do the enjoy life thing. I'm trying to do that. And I think I'm having some success at it. Like I actually have to pay attention to moments where I'm like, hey, dude, just enjoy what you have in your mouth. Why don't you try that? Why don't you just enjoy sitting on your porch? Why don't you just enjoy it, man? The clock is ticking, bro. Why don't you enjoy giving love to your cats and being empathetic with other human beings? Why don't you do that? Why don't you do what you can? Why don't you like focus in on who you're voting for in this California local elections and state elections? Who are you voting for? Why don't you do a little research? Why don't you try that? Why don't you order some stuff online that'll make you feel better, like those little things you put in a drain that catch the random food so you don't have to use your garbage disposal and fuck up your plumbing? A lot of people don't know that. Garbage disposal is not for garbage disposal. It's just for loose shit that gets in there that shouldn't be in there anyways. So you get rid of that. Don't fucking put your whole life into your garbage disposal. Don't do entire cakes or the end of celeries or any of that. Don't use it like that. Like my mother used to use it, like a mouth that wasn't hers. That's how my mother used her garbage disposal. It's like, all right, there's a cake on the counter. I'm going to eat one piece of it compulsively and fast and without any joy whatsoever. And then I'm going to aggressively shove the rest of the cake down the garbage disposal. That's my second mouth. The garbage disposal will keep me from gaining weight. Sorry, man. Stream of consciousness. You never know what's going to happen. My mom's okay. Thanks for asking. She's a little dizzy. I think she's going to be all right. I don't know what I'm going to do at the Montreal Gala. I got to figure out some time. Shit. There's a lot going on. I got to work on some new material. Look, I'm already doing like 2 hours. Way off. Back off. You know what's lovely, though? I'll tell you what's lovely, honestly, is that I'm getting a lot of emails about the bad guys. And first of all, there's a lot of kids that walk out of there, according to their parents, and say that I'm their favorite character, which I find very moving and touching. But I'm also getting a lot of emails from parents who are fans of mine who now have this experience of me with their kid that they couldn't have, obviously, just watching my stand-up or something, but they can both have these separate but common experiences with me. Now, this isn't a selfish thing. I just find it very sweet that it's happening. I'm glad that that movie did so well, and I'm glad that people enjoy it, but it's definitely something I never thought in my life would happen, which is that I'd have some fans who are under 10. So that's exciting, right? Fans under 10 for the Snake. The Snake's a great character. So Michael Che and I had this lovely conversation a few weeks ago in New York City in my hotel room. This Saturday is the season finale of Saturday Night Live. Season 2 of That Damn Michael Che premieres next Thursday, May 26th on HBO Max. And we've never really talked. So this is, we've met a couple times, but this is the first time we talked. And it was great. It was great. This is me talking to Michael Che. Jimmy, like, whether it's a voice or an expression, like, he knows how to... Working with a dude that's, like, you know, he knows how the whole...
I love Jimmy.
He's a good guy, right?
He's a great guy. He's always been great to me.
How long did you work with him over there?
I never worked with him. We never overlapped, but my second show at SNL as a writer...
Yeah.
Justin was hosting...
Yeah.
So, like, Jimmy was around.
Oh, because
you know what I mean? Yeah. So I kind of met him very, very quickly. And then like, you know, like, he'd always be around. Like, he'd be around. Like, he hosted, I think, like, the next season or something like that. So you're around him.
And he's, in the building.
He's always been in the building. Yeah. So he's in the, you know, he's right on 6. And then I know Amir and them. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was like, I don't even know how long I don't know how I've met him. Is that, you know, like, that's how long I feel like I've known him.
Yeah, I think everybody in that building loses track of time.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a casino, like no clocks or windows type thing.
It's like, true, right?
Yeah, literally, yeah.
Oh, shit. I never thought about that, but it's kind of like that. I mean, I've only been there a couple times, and I was like, have I been here a week?
Yeah, it's got that feeling. It's like forever.
Yeah, so I went over to, I did the full spread at Katz's about an hour ago. I did the whole thing.
Isn't it crazy there's a line wrapped around the block for that?
I know a guy. You could probably get in.
I could probably get in. That's,
I think you've earned that.
I would hope so.
That you could go into the sandwich place.
But it's just crazy. I remember going there as a kid. Like, my grandmother, like, that was our Sunday treat. My grandmother would go to Katz.
Oh, really?
And, like, we'd share, like, a pastrami sandwich.
Sure.
My grandmother would always get the hot dog and the knish. And so, like, that place just reminded me of... I don't know. It just feels weird that people want to go there.
It's all that's left, dude.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, there's no other delis anymore. There's, like, there's no Jews.
No.
They go there, but they look at meat and they look at Jews.
Yeah. Still the best pastrami, though.
I think so. It's, I mean, like, it must have been when you were a kid, though. Like, how, you grew up around here?
I grew up on Allen Street.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the situation then?
Oh, that was public housing, man.
Right here?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How old are you?
30. I'll be 39 in like a week.
So what year?
Like a month.
What year was that you were born in?
83.
Then? Huh. Because I came down here in 89, and I was on second between A and B.
Yeah, that's a lot of... Yeah, this was all...
Dope.
This was all kind of dope. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
This was all dope. So it's sad, but it's also like funny. Like, people will say, oh, man, I missed the gritty New York. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Yeah,
no, you don't. Do you have uncles in prison still? Do you have, you know what I mean, cousins that OD'd and shit like that? Like, you don't miss it. It's nice now. I like it now. I like it right now.
Well, those people don't know what they're. I mean, I think I was one of those people until you start to realize, like, I don't know, dope's better than crack, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if you got to take one.
Right, because it was weird down here.
It's a lot easier to catch the guy stealing your shit if he's on dope than if he's on crack.
Because he'd stop and he didn't know he stopped.
He's just stuck there.
You can just take your shit back.
You can just take the book back right off of him. He won't know the difference.
But I just remember the whole, like, when I was on second, there was a dope doorway right next to my house. Mm-hmm. And they had these guys, I think it was, I don't know if it was Colombians or Dominicans, I don't know, it was Latino for sure.
Yeah.
But they had the guys at the end of the street, on each side of the street,
yeah.
The lookouts, mm-hmm. And then they had, you know, and junkies would line up like 30 deep.
Yeah.
Like, it was a movie.
It was crazy.
It was crazy.
It's crazy that everyone knew it, but cops did nothing about it.
So you grew up in that area? In
yeah,
that neighborhood?
It was like a tidal wave, I remember. Like, just, you would just 80s? Hear about people that you know, lived in your building,
right.
lived in other buildings for years, and the next thing you know, that 30 years, 20 years,
in
40
prison?
Years in prison.
Or yeah. dead.
Prison.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they're dead for 30
no,
years.
No, but I mean, but I mean, or dead, or dead.
Or dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For
because
sure.
Because that was when the dope got really clean. So, because they realized that white people would snort dope, but they wouldn't shoot it. So there was a period there in the 80s where the heroin on the street was so good that people were dying pretty easy.
I feel like it was, for my neighborhood, yeah. it was more crack.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For my neighborhood, I think it was, you would hear more about people going away for selling crack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what like all of the time came down because it was so fast and everybody was doing it,
right.
and it was so easy to get.
Yeah,
that it was just like it was crazy. It
makes people crazy.
Yeah, and it was like all at one time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
yeah. It was like
just a celebration of psychosis on the street.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the first iPhone. It was like everyone had to have it. They were lined up to get it. You can't remember life before it.
And then you connect. You stay connected to it.
And you stay
it's
connected
what your life
to
is.
It. That's all it is.
It's your.
It's like an appendage. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The pipe.
Yeah.
How many kids are in your family?
I'm the youngest of seven.
Oh my God.
Is that a lot? That's not a lot.
What are you talking about?
What are you?
Two.
Oh.
Well, I don't know. Catholics, blacks, Hasidic Jews. I guess seven's not a lot.
That's not a lot. No.
Yes, it is.
Wait, what's your background? Were you?
I'm a Jew.
Yeah, but Jews don't have a lot of kids?
Not the regular ones.
Oh, okay.
The hatted ones seem to have quite a few. I was just at the Hertz and I saw some woman and a Hasidic guy. They had like seven kids and she didn't even look like she was 40 yet.
Well, she was wearing a brown wig.
Brown wig, and she looked tired and sad and lost.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I always feel bad for those women because
yeah.
every time I'm at a bar late night or randomly, you'll just see like one Hasidic man just come in drinking, trying to touch the girls. And you're like, your wife is at home right now, covered up.
Yeah.
And you're out here drinking.
Yeah. Or driving around your station wagon looking for hookers.
Exactly.
Yeah. I always used to see him down on the Lower East Side driving around looking for trouble.
It's the saddest thing in the world.
But I heard there was some sort of loophole.
Oh.
Like, you know, I don't know. Like, they can fuck hookers or something.
What?
It's biblical. I don't know.
Oh, maybe is it kind of like, because they're doing the work?
Or something, or that.
One of the
like,
things, like,
not,
you know, like, you can't use the electric, but you can let somebody else push the elevator button for you on a Saturday.
It's a Sabbath thing? Yeah. You can't fuck your wife, but you can fuck a hooker if she's not Jewish? Maybe.
I don't know.
Or you can have somebody fuck her with your dick.
Technically, she's doing the work. Yeah, sure.
Oh, man. So where are all your sibs at?
All spread out, man. We left Lower East Side when I was about 10.
Yeah.
We moved to Jersey City because we got out of public housing, but still Manhattan was way too expensive.
And you live with your mom?
My mom, yeah.
And your old man?
My parents were separated like, I think when I was conceived even, you know, like
really?
I was the last one. I'm the youngest.
And he was out?
He was gone. Yeah. Like, they were married, but he was gone.
Yeah.
And
do you have a relationship with him?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
You know, what's interesting is I think it's because we're very similar people, but I get along way better with my dad, but I'm closer to my mom.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Like, me and my dad have never had like a falling out or argument or anything.
Well,
like,
I mean, if you accept that he wasn't there.
Well, it's not that he wasn't, he was there, he wasn't right. in the house.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, well, that makes sense. That was the easier one. You love your mom because she took care of this. Yeah, there was probably like kind of that weird, like, all right, I'll do it. But your dad was more like, hey, no?
I don't know, because me and my mom, we would, I don't know. I guess maybe that's a good way to think of it.
She took care of you and you were able to have a good time with him. No,
maybe.
Isn't that usually the way it goes.
Maybe when
you're the one who's got to, you know, shoulder the burden of bringing the kid up, and you know that's where the love is.
Oh, but I've been kicked out of the house so many times
by her.
Yeah,
for what?
Oh man, I don't know. You know, yeah. I got, first time I got kicked out of the house, I was 14. Then I was 16.
And what, you just go to your dad's?
I went to my sister's first. Then I went to my dad's.
What'd you get kicked out for? 14?
Not going to school.
So that was going to make it better? Get out. Go to school, live in the street.
Yeah, that was, I didn't understand the logic.
Yeah.
It was one of them things like my family background is like, if you don't follow the rules, then you're out.
Yeah.
We don't care how old you are.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think now. Like, I think, oh, good God, 14 now, but back then, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I guess it's time to go on my own kind of thing.
Right.
14, I don't know.
How old's your oldest sibling?
I was tall, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
My sister was 12 years older than me.
The oldest sister?
Yeah.
Well, that's not that much.
I'm the last, so it's like.
But there are how many brothers and sisters?
It's 15, 14, 12, 10, 9, 8, me.
Oh, so there's a
so
big
they're
gap.
Way, yeah, there's a huge gap. I was going to say my parents were separated.
Right. When they had you?
When they had me.
Oh, I see. So it was like you want to just try it. We're both lonely.
I don't know. The cable was out or something.
Yeah, right,
I don't
know
what happened.
What are you doing? How's it going over there?
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
So you're getting thrown out of the house a lot or no?
As a kid, I used to a lot. I was very like, I thought I was older than I was. You know, I thought I was a little bit more. I just always thought I had my mind made up. If I was against something, I could stand up. I didn't realize. Yeah, super stubborn.
Yeah.
Taurus, they say. You know?
Yeah.
Super stubborn.
What? But you didn't get fucked up?
No.
That's good.
No, I didn't.
That's good.
What do you mean? Like high?
I mean like, yeah, drugs or anything?
No, never.
Fucking that. At least you thank your parents for that?
Well, my dad was an addict. Oh. Well, still an addict, I guess, but he's been recovered for over 30 years, I guess.
Yeah?
But or in recovery. I don't know the tenses for it, but he's been in recovery long as I know. But so I've always, and also too, like, you know, if you grow up in a neighborhood with a lot of drugs and all of that stuff, there's kind of a fine line between people that use drugs, even people who sell drugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like there's a hierarchy. So it wasn't cool to do drugs in community. You
right.
know what I mean? In my neighborhood. It was like, oh, you've crossed the line of drug addict kind of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like a stigma because we lost a lot of people. You see, you know, there's a lot of pain that came from that shit.
So people knew it existed and they knew about it.
Oh my God.
But you didn't want to do it.
You just didn't want to be on the wrong side of it.
Yeah.
If you sold, you could get more respect selling drugs than doing drugs.
Okay.
Which is crazy because the destruction seems to be in the
marketing. Yeah.
But it's just as addictive. Both are just as addictive, which we didn't know. But I always stayed away from it just because of seeing
both.
Well, yeah, just seeing the death, seeing the.
It's so weird, dude.
It was rough to watch growing up.
When I lived down there, because that was like the first time I got sober.
Yeah.
I moved down the Lower East Side. I came here to New York. I'd been sober a little while. And I just see these junkies come down. And you see the same dudes every day. And you'd be like, what the fuck? You know, they look terrible. They're sweaty. They're, you know, just like ghosts, like zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, God damn, is this the best thing to see being sober? Just see these fuckers all fucked up every day as a reminder. But it's weird how the junkie brain or the addict brain works. Because I'm there about a year. And so it slowly starts to shift to like, that shit must be really good.
Yeah, something. He's coming back. He's
looking like that. He's willing to give up everything for whatever the fuck is in that doorway.
Must be not bad.
Yeah. Must be worth something.
Yeah, but I guess it's also different too. As a kid, you start to, if you grow up in it, you start to see like your friends' moms or your friends.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Dads and family members and people who used to be, you know,
normal
or not normal anymore. And then it's just like quick. Just a quick fall off.
Yeah.
Like, wow, where's her teeth? You know, all of that stuff. Shit like that. You
gotta deal with the kid all fucking angry and sad.
It's like getting bit by a zombie where you're like, oh, just
wow.
You want nothing to do with it.
But you never saw your old man like that?
No, never. Oh. Never. My dad, I think his biggie was booze.
Booze. Old school.
Yeah.
But you saw
he definitely, you know, did what he did.
Yeah.
But I think like his big one was booze.
But so did your siblings see him drunk?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Oh, so that's interesting. You probably got the best version of the guy.
Yeah, I did. I remember, it's so crazy to say, because I remember when I was a kid, I thought my dad was the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
And every time I would tell him that, he would get so embarrassed, like, dude, you have no idea who you're talking to. You know what I mean? So
don't ask your sister.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just like a fun thing where I just thought he had low self-esteem. Right. I had no idea he had a history. You know?
You never asked your siblings about him?
I knew things, yeah. But you know, people aren't going to tell you bad things,
sure,
about your dad
when you're a kid.
When you're a kid,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, not till later.
Yeah,
and then they tell you.
Then they tell you.
That's the funny. The statute of limitations on shit you shouldn't tell your kids runs out when you're like, I think in your 60s.
Right. Yeah. But I don't think it was ever like, even then, it wasn't ever that he was a bad guy.
Right.
It was just
drunk.
It was just a fucking sick. You know.
Yeah. Fucked up guy.
It's just fucked up.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, I mean, I know people. Like, and it's funny, the kids of drunks go either way. They either become a drunk or they become a complete control freak. Like, yeah, I'm not going to be a drunk.
Oh, now boozing is, I could see it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a rough one.
Yeah.
I try not to drink too much so that I don't ever have to quit.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to keep it. I'll take a couple days off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But you like it though?
I like it a lot, man. Especially for like, I feel like the way you start performing is what you become addicted to. The way, it's almost like a baseball player's socks. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like on a hit streak, like you don't want to change a fucking thing. Yeah. So I was doing comedy drinking starting out.
Sure.
And now it's like in the back of your head of have a drink. It's a ritual.
It is.
It all becomes a ritual. Well, hang out at the bar, have a drink, talk with your friends, do the set, shit on somebody, you know, go have another drink. Didn't he ride in that high?
Yeah, yeah. There are guys that can't do it without drinking.
Yeah.
But I don't think, like, I know I've performed on everything.
Yeah.
But, I don't think I perform better.
No.
You know,
no one does.
Yeah.
No one does.
But I can understand the sort of, like, the one drink to get that, to ease you into... You know, it probably make your first 4 minutes better. But then if you get another drink, I don't know.
It just makes what you're willing to try better.
Sure.
I think it's just a slower start maybe only because of your apprehension of being sober, thinking you can't do it. But it's all the fucking same. You got it all in you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be that good if you needed to drink.
Yeah. I can't imagine it anymore. It's hard for me to... But I definitely was doing it at some point. So when did you start doing stand-up?
I started 2009. I was 26.
Oh, you were old.
I was an old dude.
Well, what the hell did you do before that?
Man, a little bit of everything. I knew I wanted to be an artist somehow, but I didn't know like what it was.
You mean like anything from like painting?
Anything
to
from
opera
painting
singing?
to acting to directing to something. I just wanted to be in not cubicle world.
When did you start doing something?
I went to art school at high school. I went to LaGuardia and
That's that one. It's down here.
Yeah. It's up on 65th and Amsterdam.
So is that the Fame School?
Fame School.
You know, I ask everyone I've talked to who's ever gone there if that's the Fame School, and I should know by now. But every time I ask, I'm completely earnest about it because I don't fucking remember.
But also, it's like Fame's not a thing anymore.
No, that's true. But that's how everyone knew that.
That's
place.
How everyone knows it. But it's like, if you ask anybody under 30, if you ask Chalamet who went there, is that the Fame School? He'd be like, what? Like, he probably doesn't know what the fuck Fame is, man.
Was Chalamet from planet Earth?
I don't know.
He's a strange little guy.
He's a good dude.
No, I mean, he's a good dude. I don't know him. I don't know him. He seems like a good dude.
He seems like a sweetie.
I'm excited to see him get old.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. It's going to be weird. A little skinny mustache.
Like a little French old man. Yeah.
He's going to be all right, though.
He'll be all right. But this is his time.
This is it. This is he's new Leo.
Yeah, he is.
He might grow up to be Leo.
Maybe, but Leo kind of like Chalamet has a different look than Leo. Leo was like a troubled kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Chalamet guy,
I got you.
He looks like he's having a really good time.
I got you.
Leo looked like the world was weighing on him a little bit. Chalamet just looks like nothing's going to hurt that kid.
Well, famous last words in Hollywood. Nothing's going to hurt me.
So you went
I think Corey Feldman said that first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. Yeah. None of those child stars really kind of go the distance like Leo has. And he's still
it's,
so fucking
it's rare.
Good.
It's rare, but he's when you see so it, it's I mean, we look at Keenan. Keenan's friggin' still going. He was a child star.
Was he? Almost, oh, that's right. Was he a
you
Disney
almost
kid?
Don't even think of it. He was Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon. And he's got nothing but funnier, that guy.
Exactly. It's like the best. It's the best thing. Yeah. Keenan got so funny.
Has he got so
he's,
confident?
He's so just, good.
He's so funny.
I can't imagine the show without him.
Well, it's neither
like, can working with him.
Neither can anybody. Apparently.
Yeah, neither can anybody. He's like, it's incredible.
But wait, so you go to that school, and what do you? What does it prepare you for? What are you doing there?
Honestly, it's. I mean, you get your major. You get just art, performance, art and drama and all that shit. But
so you're
really,
acting and stuff while you're there?
No, I was doing painting.
You were painting.
I was doing fine art. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like figurative painting?
Yeah.
You good?
Yeah, no.
But you tried.
I would have stuck with it if I was good.
Yeah.
I wasn't that good. I tried. I liked it, but I knew it was like not my first language.
Uh-huh.
I knew how to do it because I knew how to do something else and I could, you know what I mean? It wasn't my first sport, you
Know? Yeah.
I knew comedy and performing was probably going to be the thing. I just was afraid to do it.
You weren't doing that in high school?
No. I mean in the cafeteria. Yeah.
Right, just for fun.
Yeah.
So when did you like?
I just nutted up one day. I was broke. It was like
this. Oh, but it wasn't.
I got fired from some job. I think I was working at a car dealership.
Wait. So you get out of the performance school, and all you do is paint and fuck around the.
I was also 20, 19.
Yeah.
You know, so you do like odd jobs, fast food.
Yeah.
Waiter,
but
bar back.
6 years. Oh, so you did all of them.
Did everything
in the city? Never.
No,
left
in Jersey.
City. Oh, you were in Jersey.
I moved to Jersey because it was way cheaper. I couldn't afford Manhattan anymore.
But your family was out there too, right?
My family was in Jersey City. Yeah.
And you were living in Jersey, working at restaurants.
Living with my brother.
Oh, what did he do?
He was a barber.
Still a barber?
No, I don't know what he does anymore. I think he's like a truck driver. I think he's.
Do you have his number?
I do, but I try not to ask people about their finances because it gets really expensive for me. But
you're the guy.
It's never. I'm doing great. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny you should ask.
Yeah. I don't know what I think he's a truck driver though, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, so you're living with your brother in New Jersey, working in restaurants. That's the petri dish
of
desperation.
Yes,
that pushes somebody
basement
to
apartment.
Oh,
basement that, apartment.
That's subterranean petri dish. Yeah,
no windows.
Oh shit! In New Jersey,
a lot of time to stew.
Wow. So
yeah.
what were you on the edge of?
Depression and yeah, it was like I had to do something, man. I was like, at some point, I was just all I wanted was just try to not. To justify not going to college.
Still, at 20-something.
At 20-something.
You're like, I still got to show the world.
Yeah. Well, because I had friends that were like already graduating and starting their careers and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm
like,
I'm not.
And they're like, what are you doing? That's the worst. What are you up to?
Exactly. Well, we're all hanging out. We're all going to eat somewhere. And I got $8 for the week. And I'm like, I can't do anything. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, I know that feeling. It's like... But you're so lucky that, like, at least you landed on a show that's pretty visible. Like, you know, even when I was doing well early on, my parents are like, I don't know that show. What network is your show on? IFC? Where is that? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dealt with that. It never ended for me.
I got lucky in that way that it was a show
a
that...
A known thing.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I just got an email or a text from my cousin, because they just did a piece on me in People magazine. And she goes, look what I found. And she took a picture of the piece. And she goes, I guess you really are a big deal. Fucking, I'm 58. Well,
that happens to me still, though. Like, I remember, like, 5 or 6 years ago, my mother called me and she was like, I just saw you on a commercial. And I was like, a commercial? I'm on television, every appointment television. And I was like, yeah, but a commercial.
She saw the commercial. Which
though.
One?
It was like, I think it was an American Express commercial I did with like Tina, that Tina like pretty much gave me, which shout out to Tina Fey.
Pulled you in? That
she
was
really
a while
did,
back?
Man. Yeah, it was a while back, but I really appreciated it.
Yeah, those are good. So, all right, so tell me about that first time. What the hell? Like, you're in the basement. You decide to do comedy. Like, who are you watching? What made you think you could do it?
I'm watching Tough Crowd.
Yeah.
I'm watching Jerry Seinfeld, Comedian.
Mm.
I'm watching Howard Stern Show.
Yeah.
I didn't really follow Opie and Anthony because I didn't know about it till later on.
Yeah, and that's when it got not great.
Yeah, I didn't know about it then. Like, just I didn't drive. I didn't have a car or anything.
Sure.
So I didn't really have all that stuff. Howard Stern was still still free. I think it was still on K-Rock.
Right. I remember doing when I did O&A. Your primary concern was like, am I going to be dragged into something that's going to be problematic?
Yeah.
You're like, is there going to be a porn star in here doing something horrendous, or am I going to be asked a horrible racially loaded question?
Well, like, I knew about O&A was they were like, they had the people have sex in the church.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
That's what I knew about.
That's what got them thrown off.
Yeah, and then after that, it was like obscurity for them. Like, I didn't know. According to me, you know what I mean. Like,
that's when they went to Sirius.
That's when they went to Sirius. But right. I wasn't paying for satellite radio. So I thought they were dead and gone. Right. Yeah, yeah.
I only did it at Sirius, yeah.
Yeah, so at that time, it was, for me, I really didn't know much about them.
But who were you following as a comic?
Oh, my God. Patrice, yeah. You, Jim, Keith. Jim Norton, Keith Robinson, Geraldo, like all of those guys were like,
guys, yeah.
I wanted to be one
Tough
of those
crowd guys.
Yeah. Loved them.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Quinn.
Tell you, man, Geraldo and Patrice, I miss them.
Yeah.
I miss seeing them. It was always good to walk in there and, you know, have, you know, Patrice take your legs out from under you somehow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck. Geraldo was so good.
Yeah.
So
Todd Lynn.
Todd.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I saw, you know, it's so sad because, like, he was such a ball buster.
Yeah.
Man. And I always liked him. Like, he liked me, so I was okay. But the last time I saw him, he was blind.
Yeah. I think the last time I saw him, he was blind. Yeah.
Like, it was in Montreal, and I put him on an elevator. Like, it was like one of these situations that opened up, and I just saw Todd standing there looking away. I'm like, Todd. He's like, what? Like, yeah. Mark Maron. He's like, oh. And I'm like, holy shit. So I had to bring him in the elevator.
It's rough.
It was rough, man.
Really rough.
People don't know him either, but he was one of the great assholes.
Yeah. one of the all-timers. One of the all-time assholes, yeah. Famously. Yeah.
So where do you first do it? How do you get the
I started vetting. I started hanging out at the Cellar, like buying tickets to shows and shit.
Oh.
Or like the comic strip, because it would just be places that I'd hear them talk about.
Sure. So you'd go.
Yeah, but because I don't think you guys even realize, or maybe you do, but like that exposure to comedy, yeah, was like the first time I ever saw comedy not in a theater, but like the working part of comedy.
Yeah, the gym part.
Yeah, the grind of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And one after another.
Yeah. Like, to me, I thought, oh, you write a special, you go to a theater, and you say what you wrote, and then that's how you do it. I didn't know it took years and years of noodling and 10 minutes at a time and
dying and
five times a day, that kind of thing. Yeah, I didn't know that part.
Right.
But watching those shows and seeing that documentary where Jerry's
Comedian?
Like, yeah, where he's like coming back, for me was like, oh, that's so it humanized it.
Yeah.
It made me feel like,
sure,
oh, this is something you can work at and get good at.
This is the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to be Eddie Murphy immediately.
Right.
Almost nobody is. You know what I mean?
And sometimes it doesn't end well for people. Like,
it doesn't. You're like, most times.
But all right, so you watch all that and you go into the shows. When do you finally go up and ask one of us, like, hey man?
Never. Never. When I did stand up, I went to I don't know if I don't know if you even know this place.
Where?
Because I don't know how long it existed. It was called the Comedy Corner. It was on McDougal. It was next to that restaurant. It's like the next block.
Oh yeah, I knew it. Downstairs.
Yeah, downstairs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did an open mic there. They used to have
the guy that hosted it, Morris, or like a guy with glasses.
The one I did, a woman hosted it. Her name was Amy Carlson.
It's a little tiny place downstairs.
Tiny place downstairs.
Someone standing in the corner. It's like, oh, you didn't go to the Cellar. You want to come here?
Yes. And I did that open mic. They had an open mic. It was like $5.
You had to pay?
You have to pay $5.
And bring people?
Nope. Just pay $5. And if you get joke of the night, you get your $5 back.
Joke of the night? Who decides that shit?
The host.
Oh. So just somebody who can't get work at the Cellar decides whether or not you're good? I'm so bad. I understand. They're probably nice people, and they, you know, they probably were pretty reasonable.
It was, you wanted that $5, I'll tell you that.
You wanted it back.
You damn sure right you wanted that shit back. You wanted that $5 back, because that was a whole other mic.
I know.
You know what I mean?
That's a good testament to the scene at that time, was that, like, you really wanted to win it.
Yeah, you did. Of course you did. You just want to be the funniest guy in the night. You don't want to be the funniest guy ever. You just want to be the funniest guy on the
$5
show.
$5 back. So who was, do you remember who was doing shows with you?
It would be like Nimesh Patel, Jared Fried, Jermaine Fowler, Kevin Barnett, late Kevin Barnett, Mark Norman, Mike Lawrence.
Mike's funny, huh?
Yeah. You'd see
Mark's
like,
funny too, actually. I just saw Mike. You got like
I haven't seen Mike in years.
He's all right. He's good. They have a baby, I think. He's married.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's writing. He used to open for me. That guy was like, you know, to be as profoundly nerdy as him and then just and to be able to fucking swing that fucking dick like he did to do jokes.
Yeah.
Go up for anybody. And
well,
do it.
It would be like that. It would be like you start to meet guys that are around.
Yeah.
And then they'd start telling you about better rooms where you don't have to pay,
sure.
Better
rooms. Yeah,
where you could, you know, they start booking shows and everybody has their own back of barroom show or whatever. And then you, after a while, you develop somewhat of a reputation, and the next thing you know, you're working.
Yeah, because people are like, that guy's good, and someone brings you out with them and you open.
Also, doing them kind of nerdy rooms was good if he was black and good, because they wouldn't have that many black guys working those circuits, so you could get a lot of stage time.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how guys get good in other cities where they're getting up once a week.
I don't know that you do that easily. I mean, when I started, it was just open mics, real like clubs.
Yeah.
There were none of those rooms.
But I mean, you were getting up every day.
Well, once I started working, sure. But the very beginning, I guess like I kind of got, I started out weird because I came in, I was up in Boston and I was doing open mics and I was at the Comedy Store for a while. But then I came in second in this contest and I just got thrown into working.
Yeah.
They had all these regional gigs all over New England. They'd send you out, a two-man show, opener did a half hour, headliner did 45. Sometimes you had to drive the guy. But that was how I started. It was like right abruptly from mics and small sets to like fucking fill in a half hour one way or the other in some shitty fucking bowling alley
bar. Yeah, totally.
That was the way I did it. But here it was like, it was
but
all those mics.
It's pretty much the same. It's just we had so many open mics.
Right.
And so many comedians had their own kind of rogue shows.
That's right.
And then once you start to, because there were still guys that were doing like those kind of bar shows and all of that shit for 10 years or so.
Right.
And then got in the clubs.
Yeah, right.
Or couldn't get clubs. You know what I mean? And
so how did it go? How did it play out for you? Were you just always doing, what, you writing jokes? Or were you talking about yourself?
No, you always start out writing jokes.
Yeah.
You always think you're really a good joke writer until you realize you're not. Then I realized, I kind of figured out that being comfortable on stage was more paramount than writing jokes.
True.
So I learned how to just be on stage and look like I know what I'm doing.
Right,
and then the jokes come.
The first 10 years or so of your, it's just like 80% of your energy goes into pretending like you're not afraid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the next 10 sounds, just try not to sound like who you sound like.
And then eventually you become you some way.
And then
the part of you that lives up there.
Exactly.
Anyways. Yeah.
Exactly.
So when do you start getting paid?
About 3 years.
Into open mics?
About 3 years into doing like bar shows and stuff, I started doing clubs pretty regularly.
Which club?
It all kind of happened at the same time. I started doing Caroline's. I started doing I got Caroline's, Eastville. And Marco.
No, I know that place. If the sound wasn't so horrible there, I would have played there more. It was kind of like a bathroom. Wasn't it all like heart?
Yeah, I guess it was kind of like, it was, because I think it was like a lot of tile.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Tile. I guess I never paid attention
sound.
To that.
Yeah.
No shit. Yeah, you're right.
So, okay, so you started doing those rooms. The
Cellar.
Kind of you started doing the Cellar.
I got the Cellar last.
Me too. 8 years in.
And yeah.
I didn't get to sell her till she saw my HBO half hour.
So, well, I can't relate to that. Esty loved me immediately.
Well, what I fail to understand is that people understand me better than I think they do. Like, you know, because she's like, you're too angry. And I'm like, no, I'm not.
Which is a nice way to
say that
respond.
You're not being funny. Well, yeah, but
that's not what I was saying.
No, I know. But that's what she was saying. And she was right in retrospect. Yeah, because like that room is
to me, angry is funny.
It is if you're angry funny. But right. If you're just angry and it just lands as anger, yeah. People are going to be like, I don't know.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I'm dark and angry, but it took a while for me not to do it as a fuck you.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was a defense mechanism.
Angry, tired is funny.
Cranky, angry.
Cranky.
Tired, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah,
sure.
Yeah. That's
But funny. That took me a long time to relax into. But I think ultimately a lot of these people were right to not give me breaks or to criticize me because, you know, I thought I was doing something. Like, I thought I was saying something.
Yeah.
But they're like, well, be funny first. And, you
right.
Know. Yeah. I could do it. I'm being hard on myself.
What do you mean you can do it? You do it.
I did it. Yeah. I've been out there. I'm not even taking an Oprah anymore. I'm just going out there and doing an hour and 45.
What? Did you go, like, Europe or something? Like,
no,
what?
I've been out. I was in, I just did Tarrytown, Boston, Portland, Maine, and Providence, Rhode Island.
But, I mean, what stopped you from opening? I mean, having an opener?
I just, like, I got tired of, it was one of these things, I think it was in order to make right something in my past, whereas, like, I'm like, all right, the part of me that had to learn how to do comedy by going up cold in shitty fucking rooms,
yeah.
Like, I feel pretty good now, I've got the time,
right?
You know, they're here to see me,
right?
Why drag it out?
No, 100%. I was just, I'm curious about this, because I was just talking to Gerard Carmichael about the same exact thing, and he was saying, he's like, why I don't need an opener, like, he doesn't use an opener anymore. And I was just like, but I remember not using an opener when I would do the UK,
right?
Whenever I would go to Europe, I like wouldn't have an opener,
right?
And I would
just well, they have
just
a different
go up. Yeah, they have a whole different thing, like
understanding of theater there.
That's normal there.
Yeah,
they'll let you launch into a story to start your show. In America, that's got to be a lot trickier, right?
No, but if you think about it, that's only because we came up in the context of stand-up.
Uh-huh.
So we came up in this context where you bring someone with you, you're giving someone an opportunity.
Right.
The opening slot is to sort of get everyone situated,
right.
Get the audience focused. But the truth is they're there to see you, they're
right.
focused.
Right.
The idea that they may not all be seated, that's another problem.
Right.
So, like, I've had to deal with that a couple of times.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just go out and I'm like, are you kidding me? You guys can't get here on time? Oh, you thought there was going to be an opener? Well, now there isn't.
Right.
I'm doing the time. This is the opening slot.
Yeah.
And in a way, you can start off by fucking, like, landing it like that. And then I'm just trying to, most of my audience is, you know, older, you know, kind of grown up people. I don't got any real fucking yahoos or anything. So I just want it to be like an evening with, as opposed to, like, you know, here's a new guy who's going to, you know, close with everything he has and then bring me up.
It's interesting how, like, to me, I don't know if this is too heady, but your career plays out the way your set plays out sometimes.
Yeah, fragmented, like, inconsistent,
yeah,
up and down.
You kind of start out a little bit faster to win them, and then as
exactly.
the set goes on, it starts to slow down, and you start to launch into. And I feel like
that's
you're
true.
At a point in your career where you're like, I don't need to do the dick joke now. I've done that a million times. Now I could just launch into that hour, 2 hour
sit
chunk.
Sit down, right,
and take my time. I don't need the opener. That's where you're at. It's almost like Jedi level shit, though.
Right. Well, that's how I'm thinking about
it. Yeah, it's very impressive. Yeah.
Here's the other thing. It's like, if I'm going to do an hour and a half, and my audience is mostly grown-ups, they're going to get to a point where they're like, okay, this was good, but he could have ended.
Yeah.
A little bit. Like,
yeah,
totally. Said, even doing an hour 45, I said it the other night because I felt it happen. I'm like, oh, you guys are, like, I looked at my watch. I'm like, I could have ended like 20 minutes ago. It would have been great.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're all going to walk out going like, wow. That was, you know.
That got long. Yeah. Is he okay?
Exactly. I feel like he didn't want to go home.
Right.
I feel like he didn't want to go to the hotel. I don't know. So, but that's a...
Also, when you have an older audience, time is a lot more valuable.
It is. And they get tired. But they've been good. I'm just sort of like, I think what I'm trying to say, and what the truth is like, I'm having a good time. They're there to see me. If I ramble or if it's loose, because I like to improvise and shit.
That's what they want.
Exactly.
That's what they want.
But you like, but you sit down. I watched your last special.
I don't usually sit down though.
No.
I don't know why I did that.
Because it's time. It was time to sit.
I just saw a stool and I just started sitting. I wanted the audience to. I feel like people listen different the way that's based right. on the way you perform.
If you sit down, you can bring them in, no matter how big yeah. the room is.
Yeah, it becomes I just wanted an intimate it to feel space. A little bit more intimate.
It's almost more control.
I wish I would have done it in a smaller venue, personally.
I was surprised. It was big. Which was it? It wasn't the Fox. It was bigger. It was the Fox.
No, it was Fox, but yeah. I wanted to do it in like a 500 seat.
Yeah, that's
like
where,
a club kind of.
That's what I like to. That's I like to perform in.
Yeah,
5 to 8. And then like,
I always say I don't know what it is about 500 seats, but to me that's where great. I have the most fun.
You keep it intimate.
I've played giant places. 500 is where it's the most fun.
Because you don't have to change your timing. You don't have to change your pacing. Like you get up around 900, you got to wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
But like, and also the new special opened with the big dick closer. I liked it.
I liked it. Wasn't what that was another one. It's supposed to be a throwaway joke,
right?
And I just started with it. I don't know why.
It was great. It was funny.
It was a very strange.
Well, the old kind of thought was with the 80s style was like he closed with the dick jokes.
No.
You're like he's coming right in, coming in hot with the dick stuff up front.
Yeah.
But it was important because I think in the middle of the newest special, you know what you were really working towards was that turn where you were like, where is the line?
Right.
So like you had to make sure you had laid some pretty good groundwork to see what they would take. So by the time you said, oh, is that the line? You'd crossed it, whatever it was before. And they really had no recourse. Right.
In a way. I was trying to take thank you. I appreciate that you even watched it, first of all. But I do think like I was trying to take what seemed like an obvious joke. Just make it a little bit more thoughtful.
Yeah.
And then I do think that the line gets blurred the more thoughtful you are.
Or the more you let people think.
Yeah.
You know, like if you...
Exactly.
If you didn't qualify that joke.
No.
The R. Kelly joke. If you didn't qualify it at all.
Right.
And do the, you know, one's harder to clean thing. Yeah. Like if you didn't sort of make it, you know, cute.
Right.
You know, it would have been problematic.
Right. just take one more second to think about it.
Yeah. No, I like it. Yeah. I like that. I like those kind of jokes. And I like that, you know, we can still do that kind of stuff.
It's fun. I get kind of weirded out. Or I hate when people, especially comedians, like we always like to make our job seem more complicated and difficult than it is because we're stealing money. But I do think that it's something that rubbed me the wrong way about people saying jokes you can't do. And it's like, yeah, you can do it.
You can always do
you
it.
You can always fucking
it's
do
it. It's just like,
man.
You know, if it goes sideways, you just got to prepare to shoulder the burden.
Then it went sideways.
For you?
No, I'm saying it's that's what happens when it goes sideways, and then it went sideways for you.
Yeah.
But you did the joke.
Yeah.
They didn't take you off in handcuffs like Lenny Bruce, you
right.
know, like he could.
Yeah,
it wasn't not, that.
It's not that.
They didn't try to set your house on fire like Dick Gregory or something like that. Like it's literally
the stuff that any of us can say, and certainly some of the stuff you were saying. You know, that would have got you in life threatening trouble, but
sure.
not. Yeah, it was not. But then. In that climate, you know, it wasn't canceling. It was, you know, burning your house, lynching, shooting somebody.
Yeah.
So the progress has been made.
Tons of progress has been made. This is the greatest job in the world, man. We get to watch people laugh at us.
But I can't. I really have a hard time with this culture of like anti-woke, you know, like this panic around cancel culture. Because a lot of those dudes, that as a point of view is hack.
Absolutely.
It's hackneyed. And it's these guys
Absolutely.
Who are saying like they can't get work because of it's like, I bet you it's for something else.
If that's why you were getting work in the first place,
it's
then
not.
Your time is up. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not, it was never.
Or else you're just going to be with those people.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. It's like, you want to talk like that? Go hang out with the people that talk like that.
And there's people that can make a living doing it.
Of course.
Yeah. Like it's also, you can't have everything.
No.
It's not going to be. everything.
But it's also like, I think what we were talking about before in relation to this, and, you know, in acknowledging the time it takes to learn how to write and then the time it takes to land in your own skin, that if you're coming from your heart and you're genuine and you're decent,
yeah,
you know, you can kind of do whatever you want because you're going to balance it out naturally.
Right, right, right.
But if you don't know where your heart is and you're just trying and you haven't resolved some of your issues yet, you're going to be doing stuff for the wrong reason.
It's so hard to do, though, you know.
What?
Well, just finding out where your heart really is.
I guess
is.
So. I guess, but as a performer, on some level, if you're that kind of performer, it probably pays off to do it.
It absolutely and does.
I don't know if you can do it on purpose. Some guys are fucked up.
Yeah.
Especially in this field.
For sure. Isn't it?
But see, it's all right.
Is that telling that we picked the job where most fucked up people thrive?
Well, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, we obviously don't fit in one place and we don't want to do a certain way and we want to get away with something and we don't like listening to other people or being told what to do. It's like you're going to, back in the 80s, there's this whole range of people that just hit the road that were running away from the government, running away from ex-wives, running away from prison time. Mm-hmm. I mean, It was like the preaching racket.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah, like carnies.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Right. But we're our own carnival.
Yeah. Yeah, literally.
Yeah. The circus is in town. It's one guy. And they just threw him out of the hotel he was staying at.
What is it for you?
What?
What is it? What's the ceiling of
the line?
Of joy.
Oh geez, joy?
When
I leave enough room for myself to have freedom of mind enough to, because I feel all my jokes are delivered to me on stage. Like I go up with ideas and they kind of form on stage over time, over talking, and I always add things. So if something is delivered to me, I'm like, I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah.
It comes from being in the position to be funny. So it happened the other night. Like I was talking about how some people have great relationships with their mothers, you know, and I just talk about like, I don't want to call my mother. I don't want to talk to her. I don't have kids. There's no reason for me to really engage with that much. And I sort of do a phone call, like I make fun of a phone call with her. And then I said, there are these people that like, they have problems.
Yeah.
They call their mother. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Here's how that would go. And I go, hey mom, I'm in a little bit of trouble. And she says, do you want to call me back? And that came from nowhere. And I'm like,
right,
thank you.
Right.
Great, new bit.
Yeah, no. That's wow, God, I'm a lot like your mother.
What do you mean?
Well, yeah, I don't like to hear people's problems.
I don't mind. I mean, it depends what they want from me, you know. Sometimes you just got to listen and then it's done.
I'm a good listener, but I'm not a
solution guy.
I'm not a solution guy.
Well, what's the ceiling for you? The joy.
For performing?
Yeah, what do you?
I think it's the same. I think it's finding something new. It's like, it's the discovery of something that wasn't there before.
Right.
That's been there the whole time.
Right.
And then bringing it to the next audience.
Right.
So it's almost like,
can it work?
They give us the bit, kind of, because we don't really know it's a bit until they say, you know, until they hear it and respond.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, there's something here.
Yeah.
And then bringing it back to them, they're like, whoa, you know, it's kind of strange.
Why did it take on the Will Smith thing that I don't think anyone did? And, you know, I was like so thrilled with it because I didn't want to talk about it really. To me, it was all terrible.
Yeah.
It was just terrible.
It was awful, ugly. I think to everybody, it felt like, and uncomfortable. It was like watching somebody's parents fight where you're like, I don't want to see this.
Yeah, and the entire community of Hollywood act like abused children.
Yes.
Don't look. Don't say anything.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, literally just everyone's put their heads down and ate their dinner.
Right, and then Denzel and Tyler, they group around him to pray. It's like, they're all weirdos. They're all weirdos.
When the fuck did Tyler Perry get such good seats at the Oscars? What has Tyler Perry done that got him front row at the Oscars next to Denzel and Will Smith?
He's done a lot, and he just hasn't been given any credit for it, so they just keep giving him better seats.
Imagine watching Oscars like, oh yeah, and then Ernest had to talk to Tom Hanks and calm him down. Ernest, what the fuck is Ernest doing at the Oscars?
You know Ernest. Oh, but my take was just that, like, look, as a guy that from my entire life and to this day, there's part of me inside that just wants to fuck everything up.
Yeah.
And I've got to be in constant conversation with that guy. Like, I just sort of, I got to keep him kind of, you know, like, he'll be, he's like, come on. I'm like, no. So, like, for
That's
30 years.
So fucking true.
For 30 years, you know, Will Smith was the nicest guy in Hollywood. And, you know, on the biggest night of his life, he did it. And I just said, you got to respect that self-sabotage long game.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, God.
Right. It was like, that was everything he was working for in his entire life. And boom, he slapped the clown. And like, Chris is going to be fine. I don't think Will's going to be fine.
That, he's going to be always the guy that does that now. Now he's Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Like, for just, he went. But isn't that crazy how you can be so good for so long, and when you do something, when you do one thing wrong, that becomes what you're known for, as opposed to somebody who does a little wrong all the time?
That's right. Where it's like, oh, of course that guy did that.
Yeah.
When you're not the guy that does that, and it's like, you really do it?
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God.
Like, I always thought that's why Trump will beat Hillary Clinton 100 times out of 100, because
they see him as honest. He's really who he is.
Yeah, like, to me, Hillary was like, she was like a white suit with like a ketchup stain on it.
Yeah,
where like all you see is the stain.
Right. Well, right. And Trump, even
Trump was like a guy with ketchup all over him.
Yeah.
And you're like,
and he's telling everyone it's not ketchup.
Yeah. And you're like, all right, this guy just likes, it must be the suit. It must be a pattern.
I did this on purpose.
Yeah. He's like, oh, he must have, because who would have that much ketchup all over him?
I get it. Like, he is what he is.
He is what he is.
I couldn't believe that thing, to be honest with you. I just couldn't believe
watching
it.
Watching it, I didn't
I
see saw it.
It. I saw was, it in real time.
I didn't see it.
And I was like
it.
Half watching, you know, doing other shit. It's one of those moments where it's like, if Chris had just said, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
It would have been an entirely different thing.
Yeah. Well, the worst part was they made him give out the award still.
Well,
could
I mean,
you imagine how little of a fuck you have to give about somebody?
Did they make him?
Oh, he kept reading the prompter.
Right, but what
you think if Tilda Swinton would have got slapped, they would have just let her read the prompter?
No, I know, but I don't know what that. I don't think anyone knew what to do. It was like 9/11.
They would have known what to do if it was anybody else.
Right,
they would have known what to do if it was.
So you're saying they're like, it's between them.
If Julianne Moore got slapped in the face,
yeah.
She would not be reading the prompter afterwards to give out the next award. They would have dumped a commercial. Something would have happened. That's they would true. Have apologized they to everybody have. Watching. They
yeah,
would have, somebody would have came out and said, I'm so sorry about the actions of whoever the fuck
did
that.
Yeah.
We don't tolerate that. It would have been a huge to-do.
Right.
This mother, they didn't cut the commercial. They made him give out the award for best director.
I thought, like, it's the one thing, though, as a comic, I kind of knew. As a comic who's been tackled on stage before, like, all you're thinking in that moment from years of experience is, like, I don't want to look like an asshole.
Yeah. Please don't split my pants. Please. Please don't split my pants. Somebody
like,
just slap you.
I got to somehow stay. You know, I did. Like,
fucking insane how little regard they show for Chris Rock, who is, by the way, if anybody did a Mount Rushmore of stand-up comedy put Chris Rock there, no one would scoff.
Of course not.
He absolutely has a place there.
And he walked backstage alone.
Alone.
And it was sort of like, yeah, that's what the comic does.
He's the most beloved comedian possibly of this generation.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And that could happen to him on television. I thought it was gross. I thought it was fucking awful.
It was just so disturbing.
Disturbing.
Yeah.
Imagine he slapped Steve Martin.
I don't know what would have happened if it had been.
He would have been sprayed with a fire hose.
I don't know what the fuck happened inside that dude's head. I do not know.
I don't know.
I swear to God, it wasn't about the joke. It had nothing to do with the joke. It doesn't make comics any less safer.
No.
It doesn't. I've never felt safe in my life. There has never been.
No.
A year
yes. That's a great point. Yes, I agree with that 100%.
Like, I go on stage, especially when I'm doing politics in the fucking middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm giving a fake name at the hotel.
Yeah.
I want to know if there's security at the club. I don't know what the fuck is in there.
100%.
Like, all these comics were like, you know, sort of like, I'm concerned for myself. It's like, I have always been concerned.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I've always known it could go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're Chris Rock at the Oscars,
You don't. You think?
God damn! If ever there was a safe place,
exactly. That's who has to be afraid now.
Motherfucker,
it's crazy.
We should boycott as comedians. Boycott award shows.
Well, they're not asking me, so I should. I'm not the top of the list. I might be now. Maybe it's going to open up something for me.
Yeah, you might.
Any comics willing to take a punch?
Yeah.
We want you to give out these awards. Oh, but I learned something from you, though. Like, I just happened to be at the fucking Emmys because Glow was up for Emmys when you and Colin hosted.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd never really been to one of those shows because there was never a reason to go. And when I watched that, I'm like, oh, this is the worst job in the world.
It sucks.
They're sitting up there. You can't make an audience out of an audience. You've got to pretend like the audience isn't there. You've got to play to the camera no matter what's going on in the room. And the room's way too big to manage. And
you're out there with someone else.
Well, yeah. Well, at least that must have been at least good.
No? I think it made it harder.
It did?
Well, because you're
doing bits.
Well, someone's talking and then we're not doing bits together.
Right.
He's doing bits and then I'm doing
bits.
So it's like, it wasn't like banter or
right.
We could just be on an island kind of thing.
Yeah.
We were just kind of running monologue jokes. We were kind of doing update style jokes,
yeah.
But standing flat footed in front of Hollywood, which is just.
I couldn't do it.
I didn't want to do it. I tried to get myself out of it at least 13 times.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
And then
I. Because of Lorne?
Well, it was a network thing.
Yeah,
I think they just really wanted us to do it.
They had and their heart set.
And I was being kind of a team guy.
Yeah.
But it taught me a lot, though, like as far as, I don't know. It was one of those things of like, well, I'll go with it because everyone wants to do it.
Yeah, it's not, you might as well try it if you got the opportunity.
But I didn't want to do it.
It seems so hard. Like that's one.
It's
thing.
Not even so hard. It's just like we were talking earlier. It's just like some people are better at that kind of thing.
Right.
And
right.
To me, it's like, well, if I'm going to do that show,
yeah.
then I want to do it the way I would do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't want to do it the way the network needs it to be. To me, it feels like you're performing at someone's wedding, where you're
if
I can't speak from my heart, then I shouldn't say anything. I don't want to MC a wedding.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Weird job.
It's a very strange job.
Yeah, I don't like. That's one thing I've grown to appreciate more from what people I know or from opportunities I haven't really had or I've tried. Like I would panic.
No, you wouldn't.
No.
No, hell no. You'd be so competitive and ready to lock in. You wouldn't. You'd think you would be until you get out there and then you're just doing jokes, but. The kinds of jokes that we have to do for that kind
right.
of thing
yeah.
is just not exciting.
Right, right.
I would, if I'm going to do it, I would want to do it and be excited about what I'm doing.
Sure, right. Like when,
you know what
when,
I'm saying?
When Kimmel or Rock hosts the Oscars, it's kind of engage.
Yeah.
Like when Gervais does the Golden Globes.
It's a lot different.
Back. Yeah.
It's a lot different.
You for you.
This felt like, to me, like, it felt like a corporate gig of just like a
shit. So what about this you've done how many of those the damn Michael Che shows you've done? Five?
We did six last year and we got six more this year.
That's great.
It's the perfect amount.
But I mean the show's good. Like it can
thank you.
Engage all the stuff you like to do.
Yeah, it's the perfect amount of it was a perfect amount to do only because it's like sketch is so like consuming. It's like you got to write like 30 little pilots to do a scene, you know what I mean?
Yeah
because they're all just ideas that live on an island kind of thing.
Sure. And you got to pull them from the air and figure out how
you've got to establish a premise and get to a punchline.
But you need show though, like
a
bunch
of different
times. It's not essentially a sketch show. It's like some monologues, some
this is a little
style.
Bit this season's a little bit more sketch. Like we have a lot more kind of proper sketches or whatever. This is kind of the show that I wanted to do the last time, but couldn't find.
But is it? It's still theme driven.
Yeah, it's still theme driven. It's looser. I think it's more fun personally.
And
but
who do you got with you writing?
Gary Richardson. We got a lot of people that we had last year. We had Gary Richardson, Reggie Conquest, Kevin Iso, Rosebud Baker. We had Yamanika Saunders,
Rosebud just got hired SNL, right?
Rosebud just got SNL. ISO's got, you know, Flatbush Misdemeanor. He has his own show. Reggie's working on a show. Like, everybody's kind of, it's kind of a fun time. Like, all my friends are.
And you started as a writer over there, right? At SNL?
At SNL, I started as a writer 2013.
After you did stand up for a while?
After I did stand up for a little
while.
Did
you have to audition for Lauren to write?
No. I came in as a guest writer. They was doing this guest writer program where they was asking two writers to come in every week or so, or every couple weeks.
Who pulled you in?
Jost.
Oh.
Oddly right. enough.
How'd he know you?
Stand up. I was doing, we were doing Hannibal's show at Knitting Factory on Sunday nights. And he was like, yeah, you ever think about writing sketches? And I was like, I don't know nothing about sketches. He was like, you should come in. And then he brought me in. Yeah.
So you guys have been together. Is that when you met him?
No, I knew him from stand-up. He was just like a guy I knew from stand-up. And
he was just a schlubby stand-up like the rest of us?
He was head writer at SNL.
Oh.
At the time.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I didn't really.
Him starting as a stand-up.
He started at SNL. He was at SNL before he did stand-up.
Right. Okay. That's cheating.
That's cheating for sure. He's doubling down. But by the time I met him, he was head writer of SNL already.
Okay, okay.
And it was him and Seth.
Yeah, yeah. Not a stand-up either, but an improv guy.
Improv guy, yeah. And crazy prolific writers. Like, insanely prolific sketch writers.
Yeah.
Like,
so how they think.
Oh my God! If you name the top 50 or your top 50 favorite SNL sketches of the past 20 years, Seth and Colin probably would make up half the list.
No shit.
Yeah, you wouldn't even know, but like probably I would imagine like their names would be on like half of them.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know how to start writing a sketch.
It's easy.
Yeah,
for stand-ups, it's easy.
Is it?
Yeah.
I have a hard time writing anything.
It's hard to write a lot.
That doesn't involve me immediately. Like, you know, if I'm not part of it. How about this sketch? I do this.
Well, Larry David wrote. He didn't work, but he wrote there. he's close to that. Yeah, yeah. But I think, like, it is up.
Well, what did he tell you? What did Colin tell you when he said, it's easy, and you go in there?
Seth is the one that actually told me why. He was like, well, comedians always are like rich with premise.
Yeah.
And we know how to punch up. Like, right. We know how to make shit, you know. So even if you don't have a sketch in, you could always help a sketch with just jokes and what would be funny to happen next kind of thing. Yeah, you write sketches. Everything you just said, like five different sketches while we were talking right now.
Yeah, okay.
You think in sketches.
It's just a different way of thinking.
It's just you think of it from what your perspective. You just all you have to do is just start thinking about what everybody else is doing, then boom, you got a sketch.
How long did you write there before you got offered the gig?
2 years, two and a half years, I think.
And how did it come down to you and Jost?
I think Jost wanted to do it with me, and I think
Warren said, you want to do Update to Jost?
And Jost was already doing Update.
Oh, okay.
It was Jost and Cecily. Oh,
right, Cecily.
And I think Cecily, they wanted Cecily to be more in sketches.
Yeah.
And they were looking at combinations for Jost. I think Jost wanted to do it with me, and I think I think Lauren took the risk.
And everybody's happy?
Not for a while. not till about 2 or 3 years in. Then everyone got a little bit less scared.
Really?
And then like...
Because of what you were writing?
Or what? No, it was just not... It wasn't working. We didn't have any chemistry. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. Like,
yeah.
It was fucking rough.
You feel better now?
I feel... No... You never feel... I feel better. You don't feel good.
How much of the jokes that you're doing do you guys write?
Well, it depends. I mean, now it's to a point now where we have so much chemistry with the writers.
Yeah.
That like...
The guy who... That you have Update guys.
Yeah, we have Update writers.
So it's
writers.
Almost like monologue guys.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But at this point now, it's like...
Right. You're just sort of like, what if we do it this way? That one's good. Let's try that one in rehearsal.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's fun.
Schultz and Josh Patton and Megan Callahan Shaw, like, they've written so much shit. Like, it's crazy.
It's so fun to, like, have jokes written and they're good jokes and you're like, I want to try this.
But they write, like, they've they figured out how to write like literally in our brains.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is like,
yeah,
you can't learn that in 2 or 3 years.
Right.
That comes from being together for so long that we kind of know how to write. It's like we're constantly texting each other. So like we'll
the
be texting.
You?
Yeah, we'll be texting, and then next thing I know, there's a joke in the frame of what we were writing.
Oh, that's great.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or they'll have something. I'm like, oh, this, I need this. This is fucking perfect.
And then, oh, that's great.
And then we'll, you know, then I'll just read it. Sometimes I don't need to do anything to it. It's just perfect.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
So now what happens? You doing the HBO thing? Like, what do you want to do? Are you doing it? Are y'all done?
No, man. I want to do more stand-up. I miss stand-up.
Did someone just tweet that or DM me that you just hosted an open mic in like Minneapolis or something?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
I was doing a college in Minneapolis, and I always hate doing colleges because...
They're kids.
It was kids, but it's also like, yeah.
It's weird. No, it's weird. I never get asked. It's like never. Anytime people are like, it's great, it's a college town. I'm like, they're not coming to see me.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, there's a very certain type of young person that comes to see me. It's a young person that I was like, an angry, overly intelligent young person that's too sensitive to get along with other young people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I can't imagine playing for them because you forget. You know, that it's like the ones that come to those shows, they can't drink yet. So a lot of them, they're like 18, 19 years old, right?
Yeah. And it's also like just from a frame of reference of life experience.
Right.
That's right. It's not quite.
Yeah. Yeah. They're kids.
I said transvestite one time at a college, and you would have thought I smeared doo-doo on the American flag. Like they looked at me like that word. And I was like, wait a minute.
That's supposed to be an okay one.
That's not a crazy word. It literally just means dressing in different gender clothes.
But isn't that what trans is short for?
No. Now it's gender and sexual. But it's not vestite. Vestite is done and gone.
Vestite's over?
No more vestite, apparently. I looked it up because I got scared. I was like, I had no idea this was like
a trigger. Am I finished?
I thought I may be finished now, but literally looked it up and I was like, oh no, it's like an Italian word for clothes, vestite.
So is that old word for cross-dressing?
It's an old word for cross. It's an outdated term for cross-dressing. Transvestite. That's all it is. But they had never heard it, so they just knew it was mean.
Oh, but it wasn't mean.
No, it wasn't mean. It wasn't even said in the mean context. But that's my point. All that energy was spent when I could have moved on and did another joke.
Sure.
For an adult audience,
right?
They would have kept. Yeah, I remember Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Sure, it's a learning moment. Now you had to look up vestite, and you realize that's not about that anymore.
I guess I learned something in college. I learned something in college.
So you want to get back out and are you doing?
I miss the reps. I miss doing like the 6 months, 8 months, year. I'm obsessed with this material.
Yeah.
Like, it's why, you know, like with specials and stuff. Like, I wish I could be 4 deep, you know, or whatever. But it's just so.
That's right. This is the first one he did in 5 years.
It's so fucking hard to get an act together,
dude. I mean, I didn't know during COVID. I was like, the weird thing was that. You know, like, I didn't miss it. And I thought, like, well, maybe I'm all better. But as soon as we could start doing it and other people started doing it, I wasn't going to do any outdoor shows. But as soon as people started going to clubs, I'm like, all right, fuck, it's on.
I did some outdoor shows.
I can't do it.
Oh, man, you missed out on a good time.
I did.
People were so ready to laugh, man.
I just, like, to me, it was sort of like, I'm not doing that kind of shit.
No.
I'm not going to go perform for Cars.
No, I didn't perform for Cars.
Okay.
I'm with you there. But I had a parking lot show that I would do like every couple weeks. I needed that stage. I was on the back of a pickup truck.
That's nice. It's all right. Once I got back and I didn't know where the hour was going to come from, what I do is I just book out like Dynasty Typewriter for a month of like once a week and just start riffing and seeing what sticks.
I'm going on the road this weekend just for that reason.
To where?
Just to Milwaukee Improv.
I'm going to be in Milwaukee next week.
Oh, yeah? I'll be there. I'm leaving Friday. I'll be there Friday to Sunday, I think.
Oh, this Friday to Sunday. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be there next week. I'm going to be at some at the Pabst Theater or somewhere in Milwaukee.
Oh, that's I love that theater. That's the one with the great green room with the coffee and shit.
Yeah, great green room and the record player. Right?
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I hope. I think I sold a few tickets. We'll see. I should know the number, but yeah, that's where I'm going
to
be. Yeah.
I'm trying to do like kind of.
You're just working shit out.
I'm not doing no theater or nothing like that.
That's good, man. You got.
I got
shit.
Nothing.
Because you just dumped it.
I dumped it.
It's all right.
But now I'm back. I got some ideas though. I did the Minnesota shows and just like fun. Just go up there for 40 minutes and just fuck around.
Yeah, figure out what you got.
Figure out what you want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was good talking to you, man.
This was so much fun, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. All right, there you go. Michael Che, you know who he is. Saturday Night Live, the season finale, is this Saturday. Also, the second season of That Damn Michael Che Show premieres next Thursday, May 26th on HBO Max. All right, so this is me playing my new partner, my new... Banker Custom Leslie, double cutaway, P90, fucking, just, this guitar is a monster. Love it. Love it. Everywhere.